Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning and welcome to another installment of a live Facebook interview for Burr News. I'm joined this Friday morning by the Premier, Michael Dunkley. Mr. Dunkley, thank you very much
for
sparing some time.
Good morning. TGIF.
Indeed. Yes, that's all I'll say to that.
We'll keep it that way.
Yeah. There's an awful lot has happened since I last interviewed you. It's been an incredible few weeks, actually, for such a small island. The first thing that I'd like to touch on is something that's happening a long way away. That's Brexit. Article 50 now has been triggered, and we saw there's been reports this morning that the EU has already issued the guidelines for discussion about Brexit over the next couple of years. You're representing, or you're part of the overseas territories, you're going back to the UK in June. What kind of feedback and concerns have been expressed to you about Brexit from the other overseas territories?
Well, obviously, you know, this matter has been right there squarely on our radar since last June after the referendum, and Bermuda chairs the Overseas Territory Association now, so we have an elevated role, although Bermuda has been, you know, a very critical part of those territories for some time. We were over in February with the Deputy Premier, and we had more preparation talks with the UK. We had the opportunity to meet the Prime Minister. And so we set the table for an understanding of what was going to take place. We knew at that time that yesterday would be the date. So we, I guess, you know, in my words, I'd say we look forward to that date, because once the article was invoked, that allows the UK, the European Union, and all of us as territories to actually start to move forward and to
something
make some
can
decisions.
Happen,
yeah, something can happen. And so the backdrop of it all is, yes, there is still a shadow of uncertainty about what will take place. But I think we appreciate there's opportunities out there as well. So for us, if I could put it very simply, it's all about access. You know, continued access to the European market, continued access for Bermudians to travel, continued access by the government of Bermuda to Europe on discussing very important issues. And as you people of Bermuda are well aware, we were blacklisted a couple of years ago, and Deputy Premier and Minister of Finance did a great job of getting us off there. So it's about access. And I guess the last thing I would say on that point is that the UK government has been very open with us and committed to work with us. And to this point, they listen very carefully to our concerns. So we look forward to moving this matter forward. You know, all the territories have slightly different position to come
out. Yeah.
And so we're going to work together, but we're going to also make sure that our concerns as Bermuda are going to be met in the most appropriate way.
It's going to have 2 years of negotiations. They're going to be very intense. There's going to be an awful lot going on. How much punch, how much weight do you think the overseas territories realistically have to get their, to get what they want, with so much noise going on in the background?
That's true. Yeah, you know, everyone's going to be putting their oar in the water to try to get to go in the direction that they need to go. That's why we started early on it. That's why we, you know, it was shortly after the referendum, I made sure that I got over to number 9, which is the office for the exit from the European Union, and got in there with the junior minister, MP Robin Walker, and clearly laid out our concerns. So we're going to have to make sure that we stay at the table, and we're not just vociferous, that they appreciate our concerns. And I think we can get it done. You know, if you follow the news every day, there's been information that's come out, and certainly since the enactment yesterday, it's been clear there's a lot more conversation taking place. So
it's very difficult to know them because there is so much news going, there is so much confusion.
And you know, at this stage, I would say that the UK and the European Union are jostling for position a bit.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It's just a question that Bermuda doesn't get lost in that jostling.
I don't think we will.
Is the Foreign Office listening to you? Do you really think they are?
Most definitely. Jeremy, I think it's also important to point out that we have a London office run by Ms. Kimberly Durant, who do an excellent job. They are on the ground and they're there all the time. In fact, last week when that most unfortunate terrorist attack took place, Ms. Durant and members of our team were at the FCO discussing things. So it's a daily management of our affairs, and I have a great deal of confidence in the London office. So I think we're placed in a good position because of the office, because of the knowledge they have of that, and because of the open line of communication we have that I'm optimistic we'll get the best out of it.
You mentioned, I think you said the island would also be able to leverage its position, I'm reading off my notes, via the efforts of the Bermuda's External Affairs Strategic Planning Committee. I never heard of that. What is that?
It's a committee that we started some months ago to make sure that we were looking at all of our external affairs.
Right.
And look, you know, governments have a vision on where they need to go, but one thing with external affairs, because they change very rapidly now in the world we live in, especially with the increased oversight, compliance, discussions about business models that you have, we thought it was appropriate to have an external affairs committee who meet on a regular basis, have people from outside of the cabinet table to sit in on it to help us chart a direction. Let's face it, a government can have a vision, but when we're looking at external affairs, we have very important partners that work with us on that as well. We have the strength of our international business organizations that we need to always make sure that we understand what their concerns are and also work with them right the way through, certainly to the BMA and all those partners. So it, to me, it's a way to having a more coordinated and cohesive approach.
So will that go some way, will that committee go some way to filling the gap left by the Washington office closure?
I don't think there was a gap left by the Washington office closure. You know, the Washington office was set up a number of years ago. When I became the premier, I looked at it very carefully, looked at the work they did. You know, we had, it was run, Michelle Packwood ran the office, did a good job. They facilitated a visit I had to Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago. And, you know, we know that they're very capable in what they did. I just thought that we would get better value for money by closing the office and leveraging the relationships we had with our partners there and taking advantage of some of the office that ABIC and ABIR, some of the people that they have. And so I think we're still in a very strong position, and we'll continue to work every angle.
Because while we've got Brexit on one hand, we've got Trump on the other hand, of course, and the threats over corporate tax. I mean, I don't want to go into this, but he spent a huge amount of time on it, but there was a theory I read in, I think, in the New York Times that was said after they lost their Obamacare issue, they're more likely to concentrate on the tax reform and the reduction in corporate tax. Your lobbying guys over there, they're going to be looking at this kind of thing, keeping you informed?
You know, it's
because a reduction in corporate tax could have potentially serious impacts.
Yeah, well, let me answer it a couple of ways. First way, after the healthcare reform failed to go through, it appears that it has been put to the side, but I'm not so sure that won't be the case, that it will be resurrected in some form. But I think President Trump will want to have some victory, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah.
And
quick,
you know, some of the words that he said during his campaign about tax reform and cross-border transactions and the control of those are very concerning, because if he did everything that he'd say he would do, it would have a dire impact on our international business model. Now, you mentioned some quick wins. In this case, I don't think there is a quick win in this, because it's a complicated subject. And I think the president's advisors are well aware of the complexity of the issue. We started on this in January. I had a call with a couple of our partners here in Bermuda to Gary Cohen, who's the chair of the president's economic council. It was an introductory call, just to basically say, look, here is who we are. This is what we do. This is why we do it. This is how it benefits your country.
Yeah.
We thought it was a good first step. Since that time, the government and our partners in Bermuda have continued to work on this matter. It is a matter that we will not let slip from in front of us, because it has dire consequences if it goes the right way. But I think we have a very strong case to put forward. And I know that President Trump has been seen by many people to be a very successful business person, and that must mean that he looks at the facts on what can bring, and in this, when I say what it can bring, what it will bring to the United States of America. To me, if you want to simplify it as much as possible, our reinsurance industry takes the risk off of United States of America.
Very much so, yeah.
And in return for that, we inject capital into that because we pay our claims. And, you know, it goes up and down the eastern seaboard and throughout the country mm-hmm. on how we've done from 9/11 to yeah. Florida hurricanes. With hurricanes yeah. And you know, windstorm and even, you know, reinsuring the U.S. government's crop program. So we think we have a strong case, and we believe that if there's changes to the policy, it will have a direct negative impact on Americans.
I'm sure we're not going to be the last of what's going on over there.
No.
Just looking closer to home in Bermuda, obviously, the last since I last spoke to you for our last live interview, there's been an extraordinary amount of things that have happened. One of which, of course, I mean, in just to summarise, there's been the lawsuits, and I don't want to comment directly on these, but I don't think we should. But there's been the lawsuits, there's been the Commission of Inquiry, there's been the various court summonses. One of the things that struck me is that virtually all of those have involved or been against successful black men from a political or a union background. Are you concerned at all about the perception that that might create for sections of the community?
Of course, I'm always concerned about perceptions, but I'm also more concerned about reality. And there are those who want to try to make that a case, and they would try to twist it in a way for any gain. I think it's incorrect. Last time I checked, one member who is subject of some type of answers that have to be given to mm-hmm. Allegations was not black.
Yes, I said virtually.
But it is concerning because I've said over and over and over again that amongst the multitude of important responsibilities that I have to conduct as premier with colleagues is to make sure that Bermuda continues to move forward and not back. It means we have to continue to not only protect but enhance our reputation. And if you look at the Auditor General's reports that were the subject of the Commission of Inquiry, I said it at the time and I'll continue to say it, that we needed to make sure that our reputation was protected, and we need to make sure that we can do everything we can to improve accountability and oversight, and that's why we're doing it. I'm not interested in any investigations the police are doing because I don't get involved, and that's up to the police. Well, and I will continue to say that. Unlike some people in the past who might have tried to push things in a certain direction, that is not my responsibility. My responsibility is to move Bermuda forward and to protect our people. And that Auditor General's report was a damning indictment of failures that we made. And the Commission of Inquiry is a direct push on from that to make improvements. And the vast majority of Bermudians supported that approach. And at the end of the day, we will follow through in those recommendations and make some improvements.
Because
just like the opposition say that they're keen on good governance, I want to make sure that we improve that glove of good governance going forward. But I'm not interested in personalities as far as former government's concerned or people in the civil service.
Understood. And I want to ask some questions about the Commission of Inquiry because there are some very specific recommendations that they mm-hmm. made. But before I go on to that, there might be a perception that this is the case. Do you think that has given the PLP immense political leverage with an election due to come?
Well, there's some who might support that. I don't support that. I mean, if you do right, you're always going to be all right. That's the case. But quite often, in doing the right thing and the appropriate thing, it's tough because sometimes it takes people a while to see that is the right approach to take. And Jeremy, just reflect back from December of 2012. We have had all tough decisions to make. And while people have been very critical of some of the things that we've done, I think now as we sit here on the last day of March in 2017, most people will look at the country and see that we're making progress.
Why didn't you accept Vic Paul's resignation?
Because for me, allegations are one thing. And if people want to investigate them, they can go and investigate and do what they have to do. Senator Ball, the day after he was in front of the Commission of Inquiry, and I heard the testimony, I called him in the next day for a meeting because there were a couple of things that I had to say to him. One is that I didn't support his contention that if he could do it all over again, that he would have made the same decision. I said, I'm not going to question your motives behind it, because I believe he is a man of faith and a very honorable man, and he's always proven himself to be like that to me. But I said, in the world that we live in nowadays, where oversight is so important, and the reason why you make decisions are important as well, that you might have believed in what you did was the right approach, but in today's world, it's not, because you have to explain your decisions. So I didn't accept his resignation, because if the police or anyone else want to investigate, it's up to them. And after they do the investigation, if they do the investigation and there's anything he has to answer to, then that's the appropriate time for me to make a decision. And I'm not going to judge a person based on someone else's perceived investigation. I'm going to judge him based on what I know. And I stand by my principles on that, and I will support Senator Ball, even though I believe it was the wrong decision at the time. He's answered for it.
Again, do you think the political optics don't look good because of that?
In what way?
Well, as I mentioned, we've had a series of summons. One of your own senators, you didn't accept his resignation, even though he was criticised in the Commission of Inquiry. From a voter's point of view, from a man in the street's point of view, do you think it would be understandable if they were to raise an eyebrow?
Well, of course. I have no problem with people having an opinion and a different opinion from me. But remember, when Senator Ball offered me his resignation, it was the day after he testified. And at that time, I said, we'll have to monitor this situation as we go forward. And I'll say it again. If the police or anyone else decide to investigate and there are charges that are laid, then we'll deal from there. But I'm not judging a person just because of perception. And I'm happy to explain that to the people of Bermuda and to colleagues about that. I think that is only right. We cannot put the cart in front of the horse on these type of matters. And yes, these are serious matters that we have to do. And because we live in a world now where every action of a politician is scrutinized, even how you look today, it's scrutinized, and they say, wonder what's wrong with you, and all that type of stuff. I don't have any problem with that. But I'm not going to be rushed to judgment just because there are those who would like to see it go that way. He's got his integrity and his reputation to protect, and I think we would be an injustice, because if we did that, then we can judge everyone before their time, and that's not the world we live in.
Of course, since the last time I sat down and we had an interview, Mark Benningle has resigned from the OBA. We did sit down with him a few weeks ago and talk to him for Burr News. And at the time, he was saying, he said he spoke about the OBA, how the OBA was formed by a merger, obviously, from the UPP and the OBA. And he said, as far as the OBA, he quotes, "You can't fault people for the perception that it looks like the UPP again." Again, we're coming down to perceptions. He raised that. Is that something you're concerned about? Is the UPP in different clothing?
I'm always concerned about information that people bring up. But let me backtrack a bit. Mark Pettengill continues to be a good friend of mine. I will continue to reach out to MP Pettengill and MP Crockwell to discuss politics or life with them in general, and to seek their advice. I didn't support the decision that he made, but I respect him for it. He was very clear on his commitment to moving Bermuda forward and to making sure that the government stable and doing what we had to do. But let me answer the perception about politics in two ways. First, people want to always go back and reflect in time, and I think that's fair. But don't spend too much time looking in your rearview mirror, because you're going to bump into the car in front of you, because traffic stops all the time, just when you least expect it. And life moves on. Now, for some, they want to look at the UPP as the big bad wolf. But the UPP ran the country well for 30 years, and they deserve to lose in 1997, 98, because they had lost touch with the people, and it was time for change, and the PLP won. All glory to them. But you can't deny the record and the successful leadership that was there. Secondly, for those who want to say that the OBA is the UBP, they're just trying to go back into the perception of some bad wolf out there that you don't want to touch. Well, I have a message for people like that who like to try to distort and perceive things. Politicians are what they are. Don't try to put a label on somebody until you know them, right? I am who I am. You can label me with any party, but my values, my integrity, and my character doesn't change. So if you want to say that the OBA is too much like the UBP, then what's the PLP?
I'm not saying that. One of your MPs is saying that.
Yeah, well, there's no need to. I'm well aware that people continue to bring that up. But the PLP has two former leaders of the UBP there. One who sits in the House of Assembly, another one who wants to run from them, and another member who ran, I guess, for every political party other than the UBA. So don't try to...
The PLP hasn't folded and reformed, though. So.
Well, yeah, but they've tried to. And I don't want to get into the political parties. I want to talk today about how we move Bermuda forward. I'm interested in the character of people who want to come to the table and represent Bermuda. And that's why I was disappointed with MP Pettengill's decision, but I respect him because he still wants to move Bermuda forward. And he's a free thinker. And so I get at times, you know, that type of thinking can have some challenges with other colleagues. But I believe I will still be able to work very well with both MP Pettengill and Crockwell.
I wanted to come on to that. I'll mention it now, but they could be kingmakers. Are you concerned at all over their support? They have been critical, both of them, over various positions taken by the OBA.
I have no problem with criticism. Because if you think you're going to...
Do you think you can count on their support?
Well, I'll come to that in a second. You know, I have no problem with criticism, because if you think you're going to walk through a rose garden every day and smell the roses, roses can't grow all year long, so you're going to get some criticism. I think that we can count on their support on the right issues as we move forward, and I'll continue to make sure I reach out to them because we have a relationship that goes back years. It's not going to be hard to continue to seek advice, to build consensus, build support. Both of them have been very clear on their direction. They want to move Bermuda forward. They want to make sure that the government is successful moving Bermuda forward. And I think both of them see that there's a lot of opportunity now in the progress we're making.
Because you're kind of in uncharted territory. It's the first, I suppose it's the first coalition government that Bermuda has seen here, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if you can call it that.
That's why I hesitate.
We are.
It is uncharted territory.
We are in different territories now, but that's the way politics ebbs and flows and changes. And as the premier, as a person who's been in leadership positions for a number of years now, I'm used to dealing with opportunities and challenges. And so, of course, I'd love to see government ventures stronger. I have no problem working with anyone who wants to work with us. And I go back again. Both of those gentlemen, I feel confident we can work together. We'll have some differences. But because I have a foundation of friendship with them, I think it will make it easier for us to continue to be open on issues so we can progress forward.
In the interview that Mr. Pettengill did, he did mention that you had offered him a cabinet position. Is that correct?
I've had many discussions with people. I don't want to put out for all of Bermuda to hear conversations I have with people in the quietness of my office, their office, or anywhere else. So,
what about the Speaker? Do you think the Speaker's position or the Speaker himself is vulnerable to pressure now?
I think all politicians are vulnerable to pressure. I think the Speaker has done a good job over the past 4.5 years. He's had some difficult debates, difficult decisions to answer, and the Speaker has provided his commitment to moving the House forward, and I think he's done a commendable job under difficult circumstances. So I think he'll continue to deal with the pressure in the way he believes appropriate. I have the greatest respect for him. I think he's proved to be a very unbiased person. You know, he's made decisions that some on the opposition might question in support of the government, and my colleagues at time to time have questioned as well. But I respect him because he makes a decision, and we move forward. And I think he's done a good job. And I think history will show that he's been a good speaker, and I'd like to see him finish out his term.
And, of course, you've mentioned the Commission of Inquiry already. We've touched upon that. Just to go into a bit more detail now. You seemed hesitant about whether this would be the report itself would be tabled in the House. Is it going to be tabled?
Well, your words, not mine.
I said seemed.
Look, the report was delivered to me in binder form on the last day of February. It was in no shape to go anywhere at the time because it wasn't even online. I didn't have bound copies. I was informed by the commissioners that within a few days I would have a PDF of it. I received that PDF, I believe, on the Saturday. I instructed the Cabinet Secretary, Dr. Benz, on Monday morning to put it online. And matter of timing, I was doing the Cabinet budget briefs on that Monday morning, so I included an overview on the Commission of Inquiries and update. It is, dozens and dozens and dozens of pages. It was posted online right away. Every member of Parliament can sit in their seat and access the Internet right there. I think that serves tabling in the House. If someone wants to table it, they're free to table it. But it's out there for everyone to see.
But presumably tabling the House means putting it on the agenda for debate.
And that's something that anyone's free to do at the same time.
Mr. Burt said, David Burt, the opposition leader, did say he would table it.
Yeah, he did. And he's made he's made commitments that he hasn't followed through on. They tabled a bill on decriminalization. And the week it was laid, he said, in 2 weeks, we'll debate it. Well, that was weeks ago. So, politicians will make statements. And, I'm being fair. Politicians will change from that original statement. We're moving forward on recommendations. In fact, my next meeting today is with the Cabinet Secretary to discuss the Commission of Inquiry. I want positive change.
Okay.
In spite of the protests by those who say that you won't make change, in spite of the protests by members of the opposition who have poo-pooed the report and said it wasn't value for money, I believe it was critical. It was good value for money. The commissioners have done a good job, and now it's up to us to act, and we will act.
Mr. Burt said in an interview, again, we did with him last week, that it was $1.4 million that could have been spent better. Do you regret doing it?
Oh, he's got his numbers slightly wrong. The final budget for the commission hasn't come in, but I'm told it will be under the increased budget that we provided them. They wrote me through the year. They visited me occasionally through the time they were impaneled, just to keep me updated, not on the work they were doing, but the progress they're making and the timeline. And so when they came to see me after a couple of months of work had started, they said, look, we need some more time on this. The budget's probably going to be more. I said, put it in writing. Put it in writing, took it to Cabinet, and got it approved. It is what it is. I was not going to cut them off where they couldn't do the appropriate work that they had to do. And then some other things came in the way that required more time, such as the Maxwell process. So I'm very comfortable with the report. I think they've done a good job. They should be commended for it. And now the work is up to us.
We spoke in November 2015, actually, when we were doing podcasts in those days for Burn News. And times move on. And you were quoted as saying, you said, my job as Premier is not to go on a witch hunt on former governments. And when I asked you about investigation, you actually said that is not something a government should do. That is something that authorities who are concerned about it should do. I mentioned the word witch hunt. People have called it a witch hunt. Was it?
No. And those people who put those words out there have done it for their own purpose. Not in any way. My words to you during that podcast stand. And I've said that before in this interview, that for me, the Auditor General raised some real concerns. And I've heard members of the opposition say, what did we get out of this report? We've got some good, substantive, unbiased views about a way forward that I'm going to take seriously and move. It's interesting because everyone wants to opine on their opinion on the commission. Well, we're going after people is not appropriate. The commission doesn't go after people. The commission makes recommendations. And then people say, nothing will get done on these things. We've talked about these before. Well, I don't agree with that either. And then if you look at some of the stuff that is there, I think it also gave a real understanding to those interested in Bermuda of some of the challenges that we face. And my commitment is to move it forward. I'm not interested in the personalities. I'm interested in progress.
The looking forward seems to be an important part.
It is, yeah.
And the Commission touched on an awful lot of things that perhaps we already knew about substantially. And probably came across a few things that maybe people didn't know about. I just want to go back to the November 2015 interview. So I don't like what has gone on there, the Auditor General's report. And I want to make sure we don't repeat those challenges. I will draw the bar up higher and higher, to a higher and higher level. Now, the Commission of Inquiry report did actually come up with quite a few very specific things that mm-hmm. haven't been addressed, a lot of which fall under your or the OBA's tenure. The first one I want to talk about is the Office of Project Management and Procurement. Mm-hmm. And the Commission, I'm going to take it slightly out of context, but I think it's okay. They say, we express disappointment with the slow rate of progress that there has been in fully implementing these measures, particularly with regard to the OPMP. It is yet to be fully established, and delay may be due to a lack of political will or to bureaucratic reluctance to embrace change. Now, that has happened under your watch. You said you wanted to move the bar higher and higher, but that hasn't happened.
Okay, well, first off, the political will is there, and the comment about bureaucratic change, I really don't think that has much merit at this point, because as we go through changes, there has to be a great deal of consultancy that takes place on it. And, you know, if we didn't consult, people would complain. The office of OPMP has continued to function. There still has been oversight. We have moved from a position where there have been qualified reports under the PLP mm-hmm. to successive unqualified reports under this government. And we can continue to improve going forward. And I did give an update during the budget debate on where we stood as far as OPMP is concerned, and I'm sticking to the schedule of moving forward, and we are making progress. I accept the comments written by the Commission, but there has been a tremendous amount of work that has gone behind the scenes to make sure we're doing things in the appropriate manner and the proper consultancy is taking place.
Just going forward onto the OPMP as well, the Commission also made the point, and again, slightly out of context, but I think it's understandable. They said the code would also be employed by all public officers concerned with obtaining goods and services for the government. However, a code in this regard has yet to be adopted and implemented, although a draft was recently made public for review and comment. So it's not fully operational, and there isn't a code.
No, it is. The office is operational.
Fully operational.
The office is fully operational. They're conducting their duties. The changes that have been discussed have not come into place yet, right? Now, the code is something that I think it's important that all public officers have an opportunity to opine on, because we need to make sure that we get it right. And as the Commission said, it has been published online for feedback, and we'll move that forward.
This is 4 years. The OPMP was established 4 years ago.
Yes, and the office is still working. Jeremy, you need to understand that just because there are changes made to, suggested changes made to the way the office is going to work, it doesn't mean that they're not working and providing oversight and scrutiny. Every cabinet paper that comes that deals with spending government money has sign-off from that office through the cabinet office here. That's one of the last paragraphs in that paper. OPMP has no objections to this. That's what happens. All of the money that's spent by this government comes to Cabinet for sign-off. That's a big improvement before, because the Commission of Inquiry and the Auditor General report was rife with opportunities where that did not happen.
Another part of the Commission report, it says, however, and this is important to note, the Act, and that's a bit irrelevant now, was amended in 2011 under good governance legislation to allow the Minister to give financial instructions statutory effect, and they're subject to breaches of criminal prosecution where there has been a failure to comply without reasonable excuse. Commission understands that this regulatory power has yet to be invoked, and financial instructions have not yet been made statutory regulations, and any breaches therefore an offence. Didn't read that very well, but basically the law isn't there to make a breach of financial instructions an offence.
Yeah.
That's under your watch again?
No, it started in 2011. So basically,
2012,
all of what you read was, yeah, financial instructions are policy, right? And policy should still be followed. And there are still certain conditions that are attached if the instructions aren't followed. It would be more appropriate to have it enshrined in legislation so there are no ifs, ands, or buts on interpretation. And that's the direction that we're taking.
The SAGE Commission keeps mm-hmm. cropping up in conversation always. The Commission of Inquiry states, the Commission also endorses the recommendation of the SAGE Commission that parliamentary accountability be enhanced by the formation of 3 joint select committees, charging them with the responsibility of monitoring the work of the various government ministries between them on an ongoing basis. Is that likely to happen?
I don't support the three parliamentary committees, but I'm only one of 39 in the House, and obviously the Speaker 36 if the Speaker's vote comes into play. And here's the reason why. Oversight, I support it 100%. Michael Dunkley will never run from public scrutiny. Nothing to hide, and I won't have anything to hide. However, let's look at the reality of the situation. With 36 MPs and the numbers dwindle rapidly because cabinet ministers can't serve, the Speaker can't serve on certain committees. It's hard to get the numbers you need to make those committees effective. Take a look at some of the committees that have been formed in the House on the living wage and women's issues and on sexual abuse and physical abuse. Good committees, important work where we need decisions, but the House hasn't received a report from them, and some of those committees have been set up months and months and months ago. Mm. Now, I'm not blaming members of the committee. I'm just saying that there's important work that has to be done, and everyone gets busy. So on top of those committees, you want to add some more committees. Who's going to do the work?
And I don't want to add it. The Commission of Inquiry recommended it.
I know they do. And perhaps, you know, now if they understand a little bit more about the challenges faced in that, they might see that that might not be a workable solution in that. And so that's my first answer to it. Second answer to it is sometimes those committees get overtly political and get sidetracked. And the Public Accounts Committee is one of those right now. That is a committee that's being used by the current chairperson just for political purposes, doing things outside of the chairman's remit, calling meetings without getting the buy-in from your members, reaching out to civil servants directly to ask them to come in front of the committee or questions. That has caused great consternation throughout the civil service. So, yeah, it sounds good. It's something that if we could free up the people to do the work and get some results, that would be fine. But in the reality of what we face now, that is not going to happen. And I don't want to set up more committees just to say we have a committee.
Understood. Just the last thing I want to talk about, and I'll come back to that point in a minute. On the airport, the Commission noted that the financial instructions actually don't address public-private partnerships, PPP. Is that something you'll look at addressing?
Yeah, I read that in the report as well, and something I think we have to look more into it. PPPs are relatively new over the past couple of years.
And
this,
they are,
this,
yeah.
this arrangement that
well,
we
had the first here, one, the whole new hospital.
Right. This one with the airport is a new one in itself. So I think we have to continue to take a look at these things and make sure there's a framework in place to deal with it in the most appropriate way.
Because it goes on to say the OPMP played a more limited role than might have been expected had it been fully staffed and resourced at the time.
Well, those concerns didn't come to me through the Cabinet Office. But if individuals want to bring them to me, I'm happy to listen to them. I meet with various departments, the departments at the Cabinet Office on a regular basis, so my door is always open to hear those concerns and move forward. Remember, this is the relationship between civil service and the government of the day is one that takes all partners to make work. Ministers can't say they didn't get the advice. And civil service can't say that the ministers didn't listen to them. We have to document things so we can move forward and make decisions.
You said there might be a cabinet committee to look at the Commission of Inquiry. Is that going to happen?
As I said, my next meeting today is to meet with the cabinet secretary to go over some recommendations, and we're going to continue to work and move it forward. I'm not going to pay hard-earned taxpayers' money for a report and not make some progress on it. So, yes, our commitments are going to get things to happen.
Can you give us an idea when they'll happen? Because as a member of the public, if you like, some of these things that the Commission of Inquiry highlighted seem quite easy to implement. It's the question enacting some legislation.
Like what?
Financial instructions.
Give me something easy.
Well.
Like financial. So you say it's easy to enact legislation, but Jeremy, I'm not making
different codes.
I'm not making excuses, but any legislation takes some time to get done because it has to be done the appropriate way, it has to have the proper oversight done to it. So we're moving quickly. I already told you that we're meeting right after this. And I've just got the report, just read it through over the past number of weeks, and there's nothing else I can say on that. I'm not going to have that report sit there and not be acted on. It's too important for our reputation.
So when you go back to our November 2015 conversation, you say, I will draw the bar up to a higher and higher level. Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied that since then the bar is going to a higher level? Or, as the Commission highlighted, that work hasn't happened?
No, I think it. The commission was critical in some areas of work that we need to be done, but they recognized some things that had to be done as well. I think the bar's been raised. Just look at work we've done. PADI is one of those things. We'll continue to raise the bar, and as we raise the bar, there are other things that will come to the attention that will need some attention paid to it, and we'll deal with those as well.
Because one of the things about this is, well, like a gatekeeper, isn't it? A lot of the things the Commission of Inquiry has highlighted are checks and balances to safeguard the public purse.
Exactly.
So can you sit here now and ensure, tell the electorate, tell the public who are watching this, that they can be absolutely confident that those checks and balances, the ones that be needed, will be implemented in a reasonably time frame?
That has been my commitment, and you've also seen progress because with the March 31st, 2016 report that was tabled, has received a clean opinion, and that is 5 under this government. That is progress in itself, and we'll continue to make more progress. Look, I come from a background being involved in the community, but a lot of people know me as a successful business person. One of the things that's important in business, you have to have information. It has to be accurate. And if you're going to stay in business and be sustainable, you have to have proper oversight. So I know it, and I'm going to make sure that it's there. And we've continued to raise the bar. You have seen the scrutiny go out of some areas because the information's there. One example, such as the travel website. Ministers have to post stuff, and now the opposition don't even ask questions in the House anymore because the information is posted for people to look at. We'll continue to raise that bar, and I appreciate the general public's understanding on the progress that we're making.
Changing subject, the other big report that came out this week is the report into the incident on December the 2nd last year outside the House of Assembly. Has the police commissioner got your full support?
I have been very open at all times on how I feel about the Bermuda Police Service and the Commissioner of Police. I obviously did receive a copy of that. I have looked through the report, and now it's up to the Commissioner and the Governor to move forward and deal with the questions that were raised in there. It's not up for me to comment publicly about it because, yeah, I support the Commissioner and all his colleagues at work. They have a very tough job to do, and sometimes the Commissioners mention they can improve on what they have to do. But I have confidence that the Commissioner means well. He understands the challenges of public safety in Bermuda. He understands the perception that can be raised by members of the public. And certainly, I believe the Commission is very concerned about the incident, some of the incidents that have come to his attention from that most unfortunate day on December 2nd. But it is not for me to sit here without any direct control of the police and make comments about the commissioner, which I should deliver to him directly. Now, we do have budgetary control.
I was going to say, you do,
police.
Yes, and that includes things like training.
Yes.
And the training was highlighted as being probably inadequate in these circumstances.
I do recall reading that in the report. However, let me just help for some clarification to you and the viewing and listening public on this. As a former Minister of National Security, I sat down with the PS and the commissioner in preparation for the budget, and we went over budgets. Always listened to what the commissioner had to say, and I think the commissioner has even said publicly very recently that budget challenges were not an impact on training. That's fact. For the opposition leader to spin it and to make things up, I think is totally inappropriate. And you wonder why people continue to put their political game in front of what the reality is. But, Jeremy, let me reflect back on for a minute, because as a former Minister of National Security, I took on board the concerns of the Commissioner and his colleagues at all time, very supportive of the police service. And the reality we worked into, we had to be tight on the budget, but we always wanted to support the police. But I look back at the former government on how they underfunded the police, and year in and year out, they had to come with a supplementary budget. And that honorable gentleman was a junior minister at the time. And so he seems to have, again, selective amnesia about this. So I'm offended when he wants to try to spread misinformation about it when it's just not the case.
Unfortunately, we're running slightly out of time. So
I have all the time in the world to my 12 o'clock meeting.
Talking about Mr. Bird, he was pretty scathing of you in the press conference yesterday.
Well, I don't expect hugs and kisses.
but I'd like to hear your response. Firstly, he says the peer review report tells us three things. Firstly, that the governor of the OBA and the Speaker of the House are willing participants in a political cover-up.
Absolute nonsense.
Why would he say that? You're going to say I have to ask him, but what's your...
Yeah.
Why do you think he's saying that?
You will have to ask him. It's just perceived political opportunity. I'm very disappointed. Look, I have thick skin, and so the opposition leader can disparage me as much as he wants. I will listen to what he says. I will dismiss the hogwash, and I will take good information and move forward. But I find it very disappointing that he wants to not only focus on me, which I can deal with, but he wants to disparage the governor and the Speaker of the House. Why don't you throw the blanket over everyone and say, we're all used to this and I'm the best thing since sliced bread? No, come up with some facts. The opposition leader said, I've been silent on this issue. Absolute nonsense. I've spoken from the beginning on this. The opposition leader talked about a cut in a training budget without any facts on it. You know, you cannot spin information to the detriment of the people of Bermuda. So I have a question for the opposition leader, and I know he's probably watching this right now. Here's a question for the opposition leader. While I support people's right to protest, did the opposition leader ask those protesters to not block the entrance to the House of Assembly? Because by right, we as legislatures should be able to get in the House and do our business. Did the opposition leader ask them, protest all you want, but please allow us in? And secondly, if he didn't do that, he needs to say why he didn't do that. If he's a responsible leader in this country and wants to be the premier moving forward, you can't play it for your political advantage. You have to play it for the greater good of Bermuda. So the last question is, when the police wanted to access the House for people who needed to get in, did the opposition leader say that he would work with them to provide access to the House? Those are important questions.
I'm sure
those are important questions that
sure
he should answer.
Response.
And I don't want the spin about it.
You said if he wants to be a responsible leader, do you think he's been irresponsible?
I think there was some irresponsible leadership on that day by many people. Because while...
But since then, the press conference yesterday...
Oh, I think it was very irresponsible for reporting misinformation, alternative facts, and to try to fearmonger. And that's why I answered it in such direct fashion.
Those are very strong words, Remit, for an opposition, directed at an opposition leader.
They have to be strong words. Remember, we serve the people of Bermuda. Many people who are struggling in this country as we try to move forward. When we make comments like that, we distort and we distract from the right direction. And you try to undermine and underpin people. I don't think that's appropriate. To disparage the governor and the Speaker of the House and everyone else in between, that is not acceptable. And now, if you have a problem with me, come at me. I have no problem with that, and I dealt with that. And so I make no excuse for the strong words I use. You know why I speak so strongly on it? Because I care about Bermuda. I love Bermuda, and I want us to move forward as one people. We move forward together. We cannot slide back divided.
Another point he made in the press conference yesterday is that the peer review hasn't got to the bottom of exactly what was communicated between the Premier, the Commissioner of Police, Government House, and the Speaker of the House. And it goes on to talk about only after our party's parliamentary questions did we finally get an admission from the Premier that he spoke with the Commission at least six times just prior to the pepper spraying. Yet the peer review talks in mysterious terms about the platinum level public order command and how the Commissioner engaged with senior stakeholders. Were you one of those stakeholders?
Well,
do you know what the platinum level is?
I know, because I'm the former Minister of National Security. That refers to the organizational structure within the Bermuda Police Service. And if the opposition leader was unaware of that, I'm sure that one of his members could, you know, give him the understanding that that's required in that. So he shouldn't try to muddle that up.
So platinum
from the
level,
peer review.
Just to get this clear, as far as you're concerned, platinum level is within the police organization
itself.
Of
course it is.
So it refers to a group of people.
Yeah, within the police service. You know, they have different commanders that deal with it those days. And I'm frankly surprised that the opposition leader is acting like he doesn't know, or trying to spin it and distort it to bring some suspicion to the people of Bermuda. I have never hidden anything on this matter. I was asked about my phone records in the House of Assembly. The first day it came up, The question was unclear because it appeared that one of the opposition members asking, I believe it was the shadow spokesperson for legal affairs, had my phone records confused with somebody else, said that I had a certain account when I don't deal with that company. And I said, I'm happy to provide all my phone records, but I have to get them, one, because I just wouldn't want to say off the top of my head, I spoke to somebody two times in that day when it was three. And so I said, I'll access the records, and once I access them, I will go through all the numbers, and I will bring to the house. I got those records, and I asked them to be deferred one more Friday because I was traveling, and on that day in question, I had dozens and dozens of phone calls, and I had to go through every one and check the numbers, because you know when you get your phone records, you get a number, you don't get a name. And so I answered it all, and I hid nothing from honorable members, but they would come up with, oh, well, is it true that you spoke to the deputy commissioner on that day? And did you speak to this person on that day? Now, come on. You know, you're trying to tie me in with instructing the commissioner or someone else on police tactics. It just didn't happen. So focus in on reality and let's move forward.
Moving forward, I need to touch on the America's Cup. And again, it's something that Mr. Burt did talk about. And then I have two questions, maybe three questions that readers, have, listeners, viewers have submitted. And I know you're tight for time, so we'll try and get through this quickly. Again, I refer to the interview I did with David Burt last week. We did talk about the America's Cup. And he said that it is clear that society as a whole is not going to benefit as much as it should. And I'm summarizing now, hopefully correctly, what he said. He said the benefits were not necessarily going to the men on the street.
Well, I don't know what... I can't answer that question.
Do you think they are getting the street?
Of course they are. Just look at the people who have been employed directly or indirectly by the America's Cup, and that would tell you all you want to see or know. And you know, for the opposition leader and his colleagues to continue to try to put out misinformation, frankly, at this point in time, after you know 2 years, it's laughable. And why do I say that? Is because there's a real buzz and excitement that's building in Bermuda. And I hear it along. I had a gentleman come in my office this morning and was talking about a number of things, and America's Cup was one of them. He said, yeah, I can feel it. I can see it. I can see the work that has been out in the community for it. I bumped into a craftsman. He was a welder. He said, since America's Cup has come to Bermuda, my business has grown. I've employed more people. Look at the real estate market where Bermudians now are renting out their apartment. Just look at all the tradespeople that get involved. I went to the dentist a couple of weeks ago, and Bermudian lady who was there, and I won't mention where it was, she said to me, Premier, says, I'm sick and tired of people criticizing the America's Cup, and please tell the opposition leader to stop it. I said, well, you can call him yourself. She says, I see the America's Cup people coming into this office. They're keeping me employed and putting money in our pocket. So yes, it's going throughout the community, and it has been a tremendous boost to our community, and the best is yet to come. The excitement's building. It's a fantastic time for Bermuda. So the opposition should stop trying to distort with BERT math numbers and saying that it's not reaching throughout the community, because in May and June, when it's actually finally here, people are going to be so caught up in the excitement. And on top of all of that, it's going to go to 140 countries around the world. And not only will it continue to support our rebound in tourism, but it will allow us to build and move forward. So very positive event. I can't help the opposition in changing their thinking. Either they're with Bermuda or they're against Bermuda on moving forward. I hope they are with Bermuda, but their actions and their words really don't say that now. So it's not too late. Jump on board, come with us, and move Bermuda forward.
Lastly, we did ask people to submit some questions. We got a few. I'm going to, if it's okay, because we're running out of time, I'm going to read all three together, but they're basically the same topic. So I think there's probably one answer to them all, but we'll see.
Is it a yes or no answer?
No.
Okay.
I know you're tight for time, so this is the last question.
I've got time. I always have time for the people of Bermuda.
Okay. In the United States, enforcement data indicates that the war on drugs is being waged primarily against black Americans. Relative to their numbers in the general population, and among drug offenders, black Americans are disproportionately arrested, convicted, and incarcerated on drug charges. I am concerned that similar discriminatory practices may be occurring in Bermuda. Do you think the black Bermudians are disproportionately arrested, convicted, and incarcerated on drug charges in Bermuda? We'll probably actually ask that as a self-contained question, I think.
That was a long question, so I'd forget that by the time I got from doing it.
Well, are more black Bermudians incarcerated, arrested over drug charges? Is it a disproportionate number, do you believe?
Well, there are more black Bermudians who are arrested and incarcerated. I mean, the facts in corrections with the numbers show that. And I put the numbers out during the budget debate. However, I think let's look at it in a couple of different ways. Is one is we're doing everything we can to make sure that locking somebody up is a last resort. And we've seen prison numbers come down drastically under this government. Under the former government, the place was full all the time. Under this government, it's probably half full at this time because of some of the changes we've made have been very progressive. Now, as far as drugs go, in the States, they like to talk about a war on drugs. I never liked that mentality because, first off, I don't like war. Because in war, the only thing that happens is people get hurt. And eventually you find a way to stop the war, but is it the most appropriate solution you have? Drugs, alcohol and drugs, are still a tremendous problem in Bermuda, and we are trying to build a better model for us to work through. And that's why we've seen some legislative changes to allow medical marijuana, which has been important. I oversee that as when I was a minister of national security, and Minister Barron is doing a good job as well. That's why we're looking forward to decriminalization, and we'd love to work with the opposition to get a bill that both of us can support as we move forward. But against that backdrop, we have to remember alcohol and drugs are something we have to be very careful about. They ruin lives. Jeremy, as you can see, I've got a little cut here from a challenge I had with too much sun and had to be taken out. I was in Boston earlier this week, and a plastic surgeon who operated on me has operated on many Bermudians for bike accidents. One of the key challenges we face with the poor driving habits on our road is people will have a drink and jump on a bike. We need to do better. And so while I want to make progressive legislative change to stop the young black man from being put on the stop list, we'll do everything we can to move forward. But at the same time, we need to show people through the work of the NDC that drugs and alcohol have to be used in the right and appropriate way.
Two questions, I'll roll them into one. With regard to medical cannabis, and you've touched on that subject earlier on, why have we chosen not to create a list of qualifying medical conditions in line with most other jurisdictions? Do you plan to develop a list of qualifying medical conditions over the coming years? And then, does the OBA government have a long-term plan for drug policy reform? And if so, will you make that public?
Yeah, last question first. I think I knew the person is who sent those questions through because they sent them through to me, and I forwarded on to Minister Barron to be in communication with the gentleman, so I'm not sure if that has happened. A list of conditions is something that has to be worked through with the chief medical officer. The current policy allows for medical cannabis to be used in a couple of stages. There are approved drugs that can be used. There are drugs that need to be signed off by the Minister of National Security after consulting with the Chief Medical Officer. So I think we have a footprint to allow the required treatment. Because, Jeremy, I do not want to see somebody suffer if there's something that can alleviate that suffering or improve their condition going forward. So we will do that. As far as the plan going forward, I refer to the questionnaire to reach out to the minister and to the NDC because they put out the Burden annual report, and there's a lot in there that will help answer that question.
Okay. On that note, Premier, thank you very much. It's great time again.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.